Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. You mentioned it, Ray, yesterday that for whatever reason, Jim Benning was speaking today, and I guess Kevin Adams did the same thing, the GM down in Buffalo. These bad, underperforming teams, all of a sudden the GMs feel like, maybe I have to do a presser today. I guess I have to.
No, they don't.
No, because they didn't say anything that anyone wants to hear.
So why go out there and just open yourself to get kicked in the shins again? Like, why do it? Don't. The answer is don't say anything. Do your job, because is this a plea to who? Is this a plea to ownership? Is it a plea to your fans? Like, Jim Benning came out and said, I can't negotiate, or I'm not going to negotiate with Hughes and Pettersson before the trade deadline. Why not? What the hell's going to change between now and 3 weeks from now? Does that mean you can't do two things at once?
Yeah, what is the point of that?
Like, I'm just saying what's in the market here. That was one of the things that was questioned. You know, I'm going to talk to Tanner Pearson's agent, see if there's common ground. You know, I don't know what a draft pick is going to be worth at the deadline. Like, when are you going to find out?
Yeah, seems kind of important to have that information, I think.
You know, so, I come off here, like, thinking it's easy to manage a team, and I don't. There's lots of factors that we don't get to be privy to. Noodles, you were in a coaching office. You saw issues in coaches' office, coaches' meetings with management and above management that we would never see on the outside.
Right.
Right? Like you would see it and you'd go, oh, probably the first time you went, oh, so that's why this happens.
Oh. I was horrified the first time you
Sorry,
actually
that made me laugh when you
no,
said
it's
you were
true
horrified.
Though. Horrified is the right word. You come from playing in the NHL. I was there for a long time, and as a player, you have, I believe, in your mind how things work, and then you see behind the curtain, and it's like anything. That's, you know, pro sports. You go to lawyers' offices. You know, you name it. You see behind the curtain, and there's chaos, and there's things that you're like, holy smokes, I didn't realize this is the type of things that were discussed as well. Because after a loss, everyone's the worst player in the world. We've got to do this. We've got to trade that. After a win, everybody's the greatest player. Like the highs and lows behind the scenes. And I think it stems for everyone. I was horrified when I first went through that process, and then you become numb to it because it's part of your job trying to battle every day to make that team better.
So, okay, so now I'll get to Kevin Adams. He's dealing with ownership that's been there for 9 years and never made the playoffs. He gets brought in because he knows the Pegulas. He's apparently a very sharp guy. But he knows the Pegulas know him through the hockey academy, and he gets handed this mess.
Yeah.
And so now you're learning on the job. I read this article, and I thought, like a lot of us probably, and you know, you guys separate yourself if you don't believe this, but when Tom Dundon took over in Carolina, I'm like, what is he doing? Like, it makes no sense. I talked to a couple of guys that were, you know, that went through, remember they had basically like open auditions interviews for the GM's job.
Yeah.
And a couple of guys that dropped out of it, I happened to run into them, and they said one of the factors was that he wasn't offering a lot of money for that position, the general manager spot. Well, his view is that he's going to take X number of dollars, and that's going to be his management budget. But his thought was, there's not two people that can do this job. I think I can hire several people to do smaller roles of this major job, pay them accordingly, and I'm still going to have the total management budget that I might have had if I hired one guy or two guys. Like, Toronto's got a massive budget. Look at their front office. Look how many people are there. They must be bumping into each other half the time.
Right.
But they've all got a specific job. Now, they can pay at a different level, of course, and so they're, you know, they've got, you know, really qualified people that we see, Brendan Pridham and Lawrence Gilman, et cetera, that are in and have been through management there because they've broken that up into individual specialties. To hand an inexperienced guy your general manager's job, like, how do you think that's going to work? Jim Benning was noted as a really good scout. Okay, you're a great scout. We're going to take you away from what you do best, which is scout, and you're going to be the manager. How does that make any sense?
Well, they're 7 years into it, and they're still trying to...
And now he says it's going to be two more years.
Right.
That's why I say, who's he pleading with? Ownership?
But that's the fans and media, I think. I mean, probably all... You could check every box. I mean, clearly he's going to have to answer for this to the owner at some point. But the fans and the media, they feel the way they feel about him.
But let me jump in here.
He's done in Vancouver.
You're right, Brian, and you're right. But let me ask both of you a question. This isn't Kevin Adams' mess. He's just trying
not.
To clean. But that's what I'm saying. Like, we look at it and go, like, this guy's not qualified. This guy's not. You're right. Now, he's learning on the job. But he's inherited a lot of things that he's trying to clean up on the go. Like, it's not like he can shut his organization down for a year and go, okay, I need to clean this contract up. I need to, I need to develop these
guys.
But
that's the nature of the job, Noodles. When do you ever, outside of Kyle Dubas taking over a pretty good team, generally
right.
speaking, if you're a new GM, it's because the last guy was a real failure and it's a mess.
Right.
Like how
right.
many guys show up and they're just like, this is awesome. Like, Jim Rutherford, I guess, in Pittsburgh kind of had it, and
right.
Dubas to an extent. But mostly it's like, this team is really a disaster.
Right.
That's why you're here.
But
that's why you're hired.
You're right. But what I was saying is, like, I 100% believe him when he says, like, this is 2 years away from what I think I'm trying to do
but
here.
But Benning said that.
You're right.
Not Adams.
You're right. What I'm saying is I'm not trying to defend those guys, but I'm looking at the bigger picture. Is there's certain scenarios where you go, I need time to fix this. Give you an example, like Ken Holland comes into Edmonton. He's got the golden goose. He's got Draisaitl under term, and they look pretty good that way, but he's got some things that need to be cleaned up just from the previous manager. But meanwhile, people judge on, okay, that organization, it's been year after year. Well, it's only Ken Holland's situation for a year. That's why I'm kind of defending Kevin Adams. You know?
I hear you with Adams, but Benning is cleaning up Benning's mess. Like Benning
right.
is
yeah,
not
right.
included in this chat.
One of the great lines of that I can think of, and I hope I don't screw this up, was at one point the Oilers fired Kevin Lowe as the GM, Scott Housen as the assistant GM, and Craig McTavish was the coach.
Right.
And then a few years later, they brought back Lowe, McTavish, and Housen. And they were back in the management. And Rob Tichkowski said, or wrote in the paper, the Oilers felt that in order to clean up the mess left behind by Housen, Lowe, and McTavish, they should hire Housen, Lowe, and McTavish.
Right. Exactly.
And so Jim Benning, look, your body of work is your body of work, right?
Yeah.
There were lots of years I sucked. And I could say, my wingers were no good or whatever, whatever, whatever. But it's my body of work as a player. He's been the manager here for 7 years. The contracts that they're trying to get out from underneath, he signed them.
Yeah.
His name's on the right side of the paper. The contracts Ken Holland's trying to get out of, he didn't sign them.
Right.
So you have to, Kevin Adams, I mean, he signed Taylor Hall, but he didn't sign Jeff Skinner.
Right.
Right, so there's a mess there that he's got to try and dig out of. He didn't hire Ralph Kruger. If he likes Ralph Kruger as a coach, great, he'll be back. If he doesn't, then he's going to have to make a change. But eventually, the wheel's got to stop spinning. And to hire an inexperienced person, I think you put them in a really difficult spot. Like, how are they going to navigate learning the job when trying to dig out of a pile of you-know-what that's up over their head?
Agreed.
Well, and it's a good segue into a guy who's very familiar with both, literally and figuratively, as a farmer and as a coach, in Daryl Sutter, because he steps into Calgary now, and Calgary's been a really underwhelming, underperforming team. I thought they'd be better. Ray, I know you thought they'd be better. I thought they would make the playoffs.
Yep.
I thought they were good. I still think on paper they're a good team. But Jeff Ward is out, the second coach in the league to be let go, both of whom play or coach in Canadian cities. Julian in Montreal, and now it's Ward in Calgary. I think there's something there. We'll get to it in a moment. But what do you make of this move, Daryl Sutter taking over in Calgary?
Well, I was doing the game last night, as you know, and Noodles texted and said, "Hey, Daryl's back in Calgary." And I read it, and but I was doing the game, and so I read it, and I was like, "Oh yeah," and I kind of pitched my phone aside, and then I read it back, and I'm like, "Daryl," and it took me. I'm like, "Daryl." Like, there's only one Daryl, and that's Daryl Sutter. And so I couldn't have been more shocked. You know, like, I didn't even know that was in the realm of possibility, or this would be whom they would be considering. Like, I couldn't have been more surprised, put it that way.
Well, he's going back to a team he's familiar with, clearly. I mean, he coached there. He's from Alberta. He's from up the road. And I don't think this team is built. It's not even close to being built the way the Kings were built when he took over. But the expectations are high, right? Like, when he took over in L.A., it was an underperforming team that the GM who had been there for a while thought should be better and needed a spark. And Calgary, I think, is in a similar spot. And we talked about it earlier. There's a couple things that I connect to Julian going and to now Jeff Ward going. Is it's not a coincidence these are Canadian markets. It is more highlighted than ever before, the pressures of playing here and coaching here because of the nature of the business today with COVID. You're only playing Canadian teams. The focus is solely on Canadian teams, and you're getting focused across the country, right? Like, in a conventional year, we're just not focusing as much on Calgary as we are this year. So Toronto's talking about it. Montreal's talking about it. Vancouver's talking about it. And you have that, which I think leads to more urgency. I think you look at a division if you're a GM in Montreal or Calgary and you say, we can win this. You know, the Leafs are a juggernaut. They're a really good team. But they have their own demons to deal with in the playoffs, right? Like, until they prove otherwise, they're unproven come playoff time. Montreal doesn't scare you necessarily. Winnipeg, Edmonton. So if you're Calgary, you're like, we could make some noise. Why can't we win a couple of rounds here? And based on the theme of this conversation, the GM in Montreal, the GM in Calgary have been there for quite some time, and they've done a lot of heavy lifting. They spent a lot of money, and they thought their teams would be good. Hence, coach is out. We need someone to come in now, and we got to win right now.
And isn't it interesting, though? So Calgary goes with a veteran guy. Mm-hmm. Montreal goes with a younger guy. You have to have a feel for who you're bringing in, of course. Daryl's super familiar in Calgary. They would all know him, and if you've been around the game, you know him as well. And Burge is very familiar with Dominic Ducharme. He hired him for this purpose. Maybe it wasn't for this year, but maybe it was for down the road that he felt that that Dominic Ducharme could be a head coach, and so now he's in. So however they get there, you're right, Brian. The focus and the expectation, though, is two things that can't be overlooked. Like, the expectations in both places were much better than they're playing. I mean, I had them, Toronto, Montreal, Calgary in my preseason stuff. And right now that doesn't look very good. And so I'm sure they had to be really encouraged with their teams. They both had really, another similarity, they both had really active off seasons. Really active.
Right.
And the results just aren't there for them right now. And well, so they make the change. I will say this about Daryl, and Jamie, of course, you know him way better than I would, but he's kind of an older guy in a younger mind. The people I know in LA talked about how much you'd be surprised what he likes and knows and uses with analytics. Like, he comes across like the farmer, and he talks all the time about shoveling crap and, if you get stuck in the culvert and and all those things. And there's no press conferences sometimes better than Daryl's, because when you leave, you don't know what the hell he was saying. And then you think about it and you go, oh, that kind of made sense.
Yeah.
And so, like, I know he's an older guy. I know he's an old school guy, but something tells me he's not going to be as disassociated with the younger player as a lot of people might think.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. What I was going to kind of chime on, too, is you look at both organizations that have had coaching changes. You're right. You bring in Daryl, who's a more established guy and has won, and, Alberta boy, all of the things. But I think Brad Treliving is trying to figure out once and for all, like, what does he have as a core, too? You know, that's a difference. Like, Mark Bergevin still has young players. Like, it's the two teams are built differently. So, you know, with Bergevin, you go with a younger, maybe more progressive, I guess, viewed as progressive in Dom.
Yeah.
But, you know, he can grow with some of those young players that he has. Whereas I think Sutter comes in and says, takes a look at this core from inside and goes, we can win with Goodrow, Monahan, Lindholm, Backlund, guys that have been there for a while, Giordano, you know, guys that have been there for a while. Daryl talked today, like, he loves the goalie. He's like, you need a goalie, and, you know, Markstrom's as good as anybody. Like, so the way that their teams are built is a lot to me of how the coaches were chosen as well, because Daryl is a guy that, you know, is going to see from the inside if that core can work once and for all. I would argue, because that's
well,
all we've talked
about.
Well,
what if it can't, though? I mean, then you've really got to, like, you just hired a new coach who told you your team isn't good enough, potentially.
Yeah, but then, what don't you think, Brian? Like, you know, we talked about last year, was that going to be the year that Brad Treliving had to dive into that core?
Right.
Well, they're going to have the answer here pretty quick.
That's more my point. You're going to sink or swim with that core and figure it out. It either works or it doesn't work, because there's the biggest litmus test. A guy who is very honest, not shy to you know, hold people's feet to the fire as far as you know, accountability in that room. And with Montreal, there's still some growth there, I believe. And you've got a younger coach who's going to, you know, carve his teeth on the job in Montreal.
When we were doing a playoff series, you know, 100 years ago, and it was St. Louis and L.A., and Ken Hitchcock was coaching St. Louis, and Daryl was coaching L.A., and they were running the coaches' availabilities back-to-back. And you never liked it if they scheduled Hitch's first, because by the time Hitch was finished, Daryl was already done. He was like, Daryl would fire out 6 words, 7 words, boom, finished. And yeah. Then Hitch was still going. And so in one of the games, I had to go and interview him between the benches. And, you know, I know Daryl a little bit, but so I went over and I'm like, hey, Daryl, you ready to do this? He's like, yep, no problem. He pulled up his pants. I asked him a question, and he was trying to make a reference to around the boards, but yeah. He was talking with his hands, and, like, no words were coming out. Like, he was trying to say the yellow dasher board.
Yeah.
But that wasn't coming. And then he just kind of, he made it work. And I was like, that was one of my most enjoyable interviews, because I'm not even sure what that sounded like. But in his way, he made his point. And so the guys in L.A., they respected him. They played hard for him. There was an expiration date.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, he signed for this year and 2 more years. I was really surprised. I was surprised that he was the name that I saw. I wasn't surprised that there was a coaching change.
No, exactly. And as you said, you were calling that game last night, and credit to Vancouver. You know, they found a win. They played pretty well. I thought Demko was great. And it's a strange mentality here. It's a foreign mentality here. And I know I continue to reference that. But I thought even in a loss, the Leafs played pretty well. You know, they had some hop. It's a back-to-back. They played a lot recently. And I fully expect they regroup and play like rock stars tomorrow night.
Well, I mean, so Matthews misses an open net.
Yep.
And he hits the post. Tavares missed the open side twice on the same play. You know, he just missed it. I mean, that happens. Two of the goals shouldn't have gone in. The one that Hall scored. But that puck hit Hutchison right in the middle of his body and unfortunately jumped up over top of him, and then the second Vertanen goal can't go in. But all of that in the mix, and they were fine last night. You're not going to win all the time. You're not. And Vancouver played really a terrific game last night. I thought they were excellent. Demko made 4 or 5 really, really solid saves. But they deserved it. They didn't steal that game because of the goalie, but the goalie was part of it. It was a big part of it too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know, it's their fifth loss of the year here in Toronto. You move on. It's all good. I assume Freddie will play tomorrow night, and I think Matthews is going to start, you know, connecting here again soon. And when that happens, look out. So yeah, it was. I mean, it was a wild night last night in the sporting world, and I thought you guys handled the news of Walter Gretzky passing away incredibly well. You know, Duffy was kind of thrown at him like right before the second intermission. He handled it really well. The panel handled it well. I thought Gord spoke very eloquently of his relationship and history, and everyone's got some sort of a connection or story about Walter Gretzky, and says a lot about him, right?
You know, like there were so many stories, and just hearing the people talk, it's funny in this, or interesting in this, I guess, is, you know, Walter Gretzky passes away last night, and we hear about his kindness and his willingness to talk hockey and be around hockey and how he loved the kids. And then, sadly, we learn about Chris Schultz passing today.
Right.
And you know, you read the people that worked most closely with him.
Yeah.
And it's the same theme, like through the remembrances of Schultze about, yeah, he was a big guy, but he had a big heart. He was a team-first guy. He was friendly. He was, you know, like everybody talking. Like the theme for both Walter Gretzky and Chris Schultz was consistent. And I mean, just a sad, sad day. I mean, we went to bed last night knowing of Walter, and wake up this morning and learn about Schultze. And I will say, I thought Gino was on SportsCenter, and I thought his words were just outstanding.
Yeah, he really has been doing a great job, and I wasn't aware of how close Gino was with Walter and Wayne.
We just found out how close Gino was with Walter and Wayne. Duffy told a story of how Gino and Walter went to Europe together on just like the two of them on a trip where Wayne, you know, what was it, Hayes?
It was a charity event, and Wayne paid for it. I think it was like a silent auction type. Hey, who's going? A trip for two to Europe, and Wayne bought it and told Gino, I want you to have it, but Walter is going with you. And Gino was like, all right, I guess we're going to Europe with Walter, which is just an incredible story. And I'm almost disappointed I haven't heard it until today. It's such a great story.
Yeah, just, man, it's funny when, you know, when that news comes, and, you know, how many of us in the hockey world or in Canada really had seen Walter's picture image across our screens over the last 40 years.
Yep. Everyone.
You know, and so it was just sad stuff. It doesn't, you know, I lost my dad when he was 66, and in a lot of ways, I think, like, you know, my life has never really been the same. And, you know, he meant so much to me. And when people would ask and say, you know, how old was he? And I'd say 66, and they'd say, you know, they're looking for the right thing to say. And they, you know, they say, oh, he was so young. And my initial thought was 66, 86, whatever. It doesn't matter. You know, it's your dad.
Yep.
And
exactly.
So we have all these stories and remembrances about Walter Gretzky, but that's Wayne and his brothers and sister's dad. And
that's exactly right.
Sometimes that just gets overlooked a bit.
Yep, no, that's a great point. Well put, buddy. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again Monday at 5.
We'll talk to you then, guys. Have a great weekend. See ya.
There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They're giving you a break this March with rates from 0% and up to $3,000 back on in-stock 2020 Highlander hybrids. Visit MapleToyota.com.